Hello, everybody. This is Neil Ewers in Madison, Wisconsin, and this podcast is entitled The Ultimate Digital Recorder. I'm talking specifically about the Sound Devices 722 recorder, which is a two-track recorder, and the 744T, which is a four-track recorder with time code for film synchronization. You can find out more about these recorders by going to the Sound Devices webpage, which is simply sounddevices.com. I realize it's not a recorder that a lot of people are going to run out and buy. The only reason I own one is because I own a recording company. But a couple people, Rob included, have asked that I do a podcast on this to at least make people aware of what's out there in terms of the ultimate recorder. Let me begin by saying that in 1979, I bought what was then the ultimate recorder because, again, I owned a recording company. That was called a Nagra 4S, N-A-G-R-A. It was a reel-to-reel recorder. And if you looked carefully in a lot of nature programs and filmmaking, you realize that this is the recorder that people used for those kinds of recordings. It not only was a recorder, but it had the ability to synchronize up with film. The price of that little unit in 1979 was $10,000. At that time, the Nagra was a two-track recorder. There is today, which is the Sound Devices recorder, which is a two-track version, price $2,000. Now, I realize that's more than a lot of people are going to want to spend because you don't need that kind of equipment. But the point is that instead of going up, recorders are coming down in price, and the digital medium has allowed that to really happen. This is a Sound Devices recorder. Sound Devices is a company actually here in Wisconsin, and when they developed the recorder, I got to give them some input on menus, etc. Not as a consultant, but just because I happened to know they were making it and got to know some people there. And no, it doesn't talk. Couldn't quite convince them of that. Didn't really try. Because I knew it was going to add too much time to what they were wanting to do, and I didn't realize that this recorder was being made until they'd gotten far enough along that they really couldn't add that. But I and a few other people did get them to at least put some things into this recorder that makes it a little easier to use for people who are blind. Let me begin by describing the recorder. It is a very solid feeling piece of equipment. It's a metal frame, very substantial metal frame. You'd think it would weigh a lot, but it only weighs 2.6 pounds without batteries. It's 8.2 inches wide, 4.9 inches deep, and 1.8 inches tall. So, for what it does, it's a pretty small recorder. Starting with the front of the unit, you have on the left-hand side two volume controls, one above the other. What's interesting about these controls is that if you push them in, they will stay on the in position, i.e. that is, they are flush with the face of the recorder, so you can't accidentally turn them. If you push in on them again, they pop out, so you can adjust them. There's no pointer. They're actually too small to have a pointer on them, but the screw, which is one of the things I suggested, happens to line up with the pointer, the screw that holds the volume knob onto the shaft. So you can feel the screw, and realizing that that's the point, put it in 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. It is an analog control, so you don't have clicks. It is actually a round knob, and that doesn't make it as easy to get back where it is supposed to be. But with the pointer or with the screw, you find that you can come pretty close. Although there are two separate rotary controls, in the menu, you can link them so that when you turn the top one, both right and left channels raise and lower, and when you turn the bottom one, the signal pans from right to left. You can actually also do a mid-side setup where the top one is the mid microphone and the bottom one is the side. So there's all kinds of flexibility here. To the right of the volume controls are some more buttons which surround the display. The display is kind of a long, narrow display. And on the corners of the display, there are There's a button on each corner. The top left, for example, is the menu button. The button below that is a button that changes the playback between the internal 40 gigabyte hard drive and the flash card. Yes, I forgot to say, this records on both, and it will record on both at the same time, or one or the other. To the right of the display, you have on the top a tone button, which, if you press, can put, and you can just select what tone you want it to put on the tape for sort of setting your levels if you're recording from it. And on the bottom is a light that you can turn on or off. Now, these buttons are multifunctional because they also can be pressed with other buttons to get to menu shortcuts. So, although I'll talk about the menus later, we did actually convince them to put in a number of menu in fact, I think they were going to do this on their own. Some shortcuts that pressing two buttons together will do X or Y or Z, rather than having to go into the menus to do that. There are two other buttons on the top row. One is a button that allows you to change which tracks you're recording on, whether you're recording on the left track, the right track, tracks right and left, tracks 3 and 4, all tracks, etc. And then to the very right, in the very upper right-hand corner, is the power button. And it works a lot like the micro track recorder. You hold it in for a second or so, and the machine powers up. The nice thing is that because this has a hard drive, although it's a very quiet hard drive, it's on now and you can't hear it, you can, if you put your ear down to it, hear that it's coming on. Now, if you're recording on the hard drive, obviously the hard drive will spin up when you power on. Interestingly enough, even if you're not recording on the hard drive, and you're recording on the flash card, the hard drive will spin up for a minute just to check itself. You don't have to wait for it. It's ready in about 5 seconds. But you can, if you put your ear down to it, hear it, and you know that it's on. When you push in the power button to turn it off, again, you hold it. And even if the hard drive isn't on because you're using the CF card, it will spin up again for a couple seconds to check itself out and shut down. So again, you have that audible cue. It's not like the micro track recorder where you just wondered, am I on? Am I powered up? What is it doing? Anyway, it's nice to have that kind of audible feedback. Across the bottom of the front, you have on the left a rewind button. Next is the play, and next is the forward button. And what's interesting about the rewind and forward button is that they operate much like an old reel-to-reel recorder does. You can actually hear the sound speeding up. It isn't the kind, when you hold down the rewind or fast-forward button, it's not the same kind of sound you get on an MP3 recorder. It's that sound that actually sounds like a tape speeding up, and you can hear what's being played back while you are holding the button down. It sounds a lot better than my attempt at rewind. To the right of the forward button is the stop button, and to the right of that, right at the right-hand end of the recorder, is the record button. You can set a pre-roll so that you can press the record button and have it start recording, or have it recording 5 seconds before you pressed it. That causes me to have to say another thing, and that is when you turn the recorder on, you are in monitor mode. You can hear what's going on in the microphones. And the recorder is sensing all of this, and when you put it on pre-roll, anywhere from 1 to 5 seconds, it says, okay, you don't want to start recording now. You want to start recording 5 seconds ago in case you missed something. So that's a kind of neat feature. You can also lock all the other buttons on the recorder while it's in record, so you can't press any button to take it out of record until you want to. One of the interesting features about the record button is that you can set it to do any number of things while you're recording. You can either set it to do nothing, so you're recording and you press it and it doesn't do a thing, or you can set it to put a mark on the tape, which is readable in SoundForge as a mark, so that If you're in SoundForge, you can easily go to that position, or you can set the record button to begin a new file so that you don't even have to stop the recorder. You just press the record button and a new file is created. The stop button, of course, takes it out of record. On the left-hand side of the recorder is where a lot of the jacks are, and I'm not going to go into specific details about where they are, because unless people want to hear about that, it really isn't going to help people really know more about the recorder, and if they happen to buy it, then we can talk about that sort of thing in more detail. That's where the two XLR mic inputs are. The microphone inputs are XLR balanced inputs. 48-volt phantom power is possible if you want it. And there's a switch above each of the microphone jacks, which is either in the mic position, the line position, or the digital input position. Although, if you're doing digital input, the recorder is pretty automatic at figuring out that, oh, you've got something digital plugged in here, so I don't want to be in mic, I want to be in digital. So you don't really have to worry about the third position. That's where the third and fourth track inputs are. I happen to have the four-track version. And a lot of other jacks over there that we don't really need to talk about at this point because, as I said, I don't think a lot of people are going to buy this, so you really don't need to know where the jacks are unless you buy it, in which case we can talk about it. On the left-hand side of the recorder also is the headphone volume and the headphone jack. It's a mini stereo headphone jack. A lot of people wanted quarter inch, but you know, when you're making a recorder this size, you can't really have everything. The first thing you come to on the right-hand side of the recorder is a knob that looks like the headphone knob on the left-hand side. It's about an inch, a little less than an inch in diameter. It turns, and it is click-stopped. This is what you can use to scroll through the menus. We'll get to the menus later, but you get to scroll through the menus with this knob. Pushing it in gets you into a menu, and when you find the choice of the menu you want, you push it in again for OK. And then you back out of that level of the menus with the menu button. When you're in record, the menu button on the right-hand side changes function and becomes the headphone monitor button. And you can set up 10 different presets and click stop through them all. You can hear channels 1 and 2, channels 3 and 4 by themselves, all four channels by themselves. You can actually hear what's being recorded on the recorder in a delay. Basically, you're listening to what you used to be able to do on a three-head recorder. You're listening to the third head. Well, this isn't heads, but it's basically the same thing. You're getting what is being recorded on the recorder, so you know whether or not it's actually recording. And behind that, or toward the back of the recorder, are more jacks, your digital inputs and outputs, your FireWire connection. This connects via the computer with FireWire rather than USB. Of course, you can take the card out and put it in a flash card reader and read it that way also. And a couple other jacks that aren't in use yet. And then the power AC adapter jack is in the back, or not in the back, but it's the last plug on the side. The back of the recorder houses the flash card and the Sony, you don't have to buy a Sony battery, but it's a Sony M or L mount battery that's often used for camcorders. It's sort of brick-shaped, but you can get different sizes, and the different sizes are different thicknesses. The one I have that comes with the recorder gives you about 4 hours if you're not using phantom power, and about 2 if you are. But you can get 2 different other size batteries, which take you up to 10 or 12 hours of recording. Plus, you can get an external battery power adapter that is a battery pack that plugs in where the AC adapter plugs in, which can give you even more battery life. Plus, you can remove the batteries, obviously, if they're 3 different sizes. So if you happen to have more than one with you and you're running low on battery, you just slip that one out and slip another one in. You can actually also buy a separate charger for the batteries, although the recorder will charge its own batteries. Of course, how much battery life you do get depends on what format you're recording in. Obviously, recording in MP3 format is going to give you a lot longer. Recording at 32 or 44.1 is going to give you better than 48. Recording at 16-bit is going to give you better than 24. The sampling rate on this recorder is from 32 kilohertz to 192 kilohertz. So you can go 32, 44.1, 48, 96, all the way up to 192. The bit rate is 16 or 24, with or without dither. And dither is simply, well, to not try to be so technical, some of the complaint that people used to have about digital media, especially when the sampling rates that were used were very low, is that when you heard a very soft violin or something, it would actually sound like it was breaking up. You could hear a little, it was almost like it was grainy if you were looking at a photograph. It had a grainy sound to it. That's what happens when you're recording at 16 bits, if you get a low enough volume, that you can't actually hear that effect. And what dither does is put a little bit of noise in the circuitry to mask out that breaking up of the soft sounds. You don't actually hear more noise, you simply don't hear the broken up sound. I have measured the floor noise on this machine at about 98 dB in both the left and right channel, so it's plenty quiet for the quietest microphone. That would be minus 98 dB, and the volume isn't even all the way down. I mean, the knob is all the way down, but there can still be sound being heard through the inputs. So if they really turned the volume all the way down, the floor noise would be infinite. You wouldn't be able to measure it. The microphone I'm using is an AKG 414 XL2 speech microphone, and its noise, what is its noise, signal-to-noise ratio, is probably about somewhere around 88, 89, 90 dB, whereas some of the microphones that we've gotten from sound professionals is in the 65, 62, 66 dB range. So we get a much quieter signal when we use a quieter microphone, and with the floor noise as low as it is, you hear a whole lot less hiss, electronic hiss, than you would if you were using a different recorder or a more noisy microphone. Obviously, you're not stuck with using just the best microphones with this recorder. I can use the microphones that we buy from Sound Devices. I have a whole bunch of mics. I'm also thinking that at some point I might want to do a podcast on microphone techniques. There are a lot of different things you can do with microphones in terms of where you place two microphones in a stereo pair to get various kinds of stereo spectrums. Larry has talked about, and there's another person whose name I can't remember, has talked about binaural microphones. There are also settings for quasi-binaural microphones, which some people think that binaural microphones don't sound very good on speakers because there's this hole in the middle. You're actually recording more left and right than you are middle. Works well when you're listening through headphones, but when you're listening through speakers, not so well, according to some people. And so some people have come up with a quasi-binaural setup. The quasi-binaural technique is a way to keep the best of binaural and make it sound better on speakers. Doesn't quite sound as good in headphones as binaural does, but for people who don't want to sit there with their headphones on all day, you get this nice, wide, almost binaural stereo spectrum by listening to your speakers. Other people have come up with XY, mid-side, bloom-line, all kinds of spiffy microphone techniques which actually do make things sound different. And one of the things I think I might do come spring, or if I can find some other recording environment that works, is to demonstrate a lot of these mic positions for people in case they have two microphones they want to play around with and get some interesting sounds. And I'm aware of the fact that all you guys out there that have these microphones play around with them yourself and come up with all kinds of stuff, and probably most of you know as much as I do about it. But hearing it is half of knowing why you either want to do it or don't want to do it. It's like the podcast. It's something that's there if you want to use it, and if not, well, you don't have to. The frequency response of the recorder is a whopping 10 hertz to 40 kilohertz, which is twice 20 kilohertz, or twice as high as the human ear can hear. So it is used in a lot of instances for field recording, where you're recording insects or bats, or obviously you have to have a microphone that will pick up that kind of signal, but it's there if you want it. You also have a lot of bass frequency roll-off options. You can select between a whole bunch of different roll-off curves so that if you're recording too much bass, you can sort of customize it to exactly what you want it to be. The recorder also has a limiter, which you can activate if you want, and you don't have a lot of control over it. It only operates on the top 6 dB of the recording, so it's not a total limiter, but it's a pretty unintrusive one. You really don't know that it's on. It really is a pretty good limiter. So let's talk about the menus. There are, unfortunately, about 80 of them. So I have to have a little Braille cheat sheet or a recorded cheat sheet or something. Unfortunately, they keep changing the thing. This company is amazing. They come out with updates on the firmware probably once every couple months. And their policy is, if you are willing to spend this much money for this recorder, they aren't going to charge you ever for an upgrade. You just get them free. You can download them from the internet. And they keep adding new little bells and whistles in the menus, and so I keep having to rewrite my chart, but you really almost do, because there are an awful lot of menus. They're only one layer deep. So, for example, you get the sampling rate, and you're rolling down the little, clicking down the little side wheel, rolling it until you get to menu number 6, which is the sampling rate, and you press the button in, and you are at the top of the volume list, at the top of the menu list. They don't wrap. That happens to be 32, next is 41, 44.1, next is 48. You get to where you want to be, and you press it in again, and then you exit menus, and you've set it up. What's really nice about the menus is that once you do get all these things set up, like sampling rate, frequency roll-off, oh, geez, you could go through a million different things here. You can actually save your setting to both the flash card and the hard drive, so that all you have to do, if you really are lost and you think you've screwed up something, is to go into the very first menu that you get to when you boot up the machine and click down 5 times to load user settings from CF card, press enter, and all of a sudden, all the settings you've taken a lot of time to set up are there. Now, as I said, the menus don't wrap. However, if you go into a menu, it remembers the menu you're at when you come back to it, until you turn off the recorder, or until you press a shortcut key that says, I want to go back to the beginning, guys. So in 2 cases, you can always reset your menus. Not only do they not wrap, and not only are they only one layer deep, but when you enter the menus that are one level deep, let's say you enter the sampling rate menu, you're always at the first item in the menu. What's also nice is that there are a lot of shortcut keys to get you to places in the menu where you don't really have to go into the menu to get to. For example, if you hold down the tone key and the key that changes from hard drive to flash card, you turn off phantom power for the left channel, or on, depending on where it is. It's a toggle. Hold down the tone key and the key that is the menu key, and you turn on or off the phantom power for the right channel. You can do the same thing for turning off bass roll-off or on bass roll-off. There are an awful lot of menus that you can get to by using shortcut keys. And I guess the last bit of information I have to impart is, unfortunately, the price. The two-track recorder, and I haven't checked the exact prices lately, but the two-track recorder is about $2,000, and the four-track recorder is $4,000. The two recorders are laid out very similarly, the only difference being that the two-track recorder doesn't have all the plugs, but it's exactly the same setup. It's exactly the same mic preamps, the same quietness. It's just a wonderful recorder. A funny story, I got a call from the people at Sound Devices a couple months ago, and they said, there's a person who is blind who is trying to decide whether or not to buy this recorder, and he wondered if you could call him up and give him some pointers on how easy it is to use or how hard it is to use. You might have heard of him. His name is Stevie Wonder. So I guess if it's good enough for Stevie Wonder, well, anyway, there you go. You know, thinking about people like Stevie Wonder and people like us who want recorders, and I'm sure he can afford more than we can, sort of makes me realize that there's a middle ground here. There's been a lot of talk on the list lately about having recorders that work for people who are blind, and I'm all for that. However, I know that there are an awful lot of manufacturers out there who aren't going to go to the trouble to put speech into them, to do all that we would want them to do, to make them accessible. And hooray for the companies that do, and hooray for all of us who get them to do it, but there seems to me to be a middle ground. There are companies which may make some simple changes, like giving you an option to not have menus wrap, giving you shortcuts to get to certain things as opposed to having to do them in menus, giving you an ability to save readily gotten to presets so that you don't have to go into the menus. These are the kinds of things that can be done easily and cost-effectively. And if somehow we can get to recorder manufacturers, it's kind of hard because some of them are in China and some of them are in Japan and whatever. But to the extent that we can get to people in these companies and try to get them to do some of the things that are easier for them to do than others, but that would make a big difference for us, I think the better off we'll be. And someday, maybe everything will be exactly what we want it to be. In the meantime, I think we have to work on getting people to do what we want that can be done easily. Well, I don't really want to take up a whole lot more time with this. I know it's been not nearly as technical a review as Rob has given on the R1, and I really appreciate that, Rob. Kept me from buying one, actually, but better have other... That's the nice thing about this list, is that people can buy stuff and they can demo it, and you can say, okay, I think I'd like that, or, it doesn't quite do what I want it to do. So thank you, Rob, for being that technical. And I'm not, because I don't think a lot of people are going to really want to go out and buy this. If people want more, I will give you more. But I just didn't think I would waste all of your time on that now. And speaking of podcasts, thank you again, Larry, for letting us do these. And I think I've bored you all to tears now, so this is Neil Ewers signing off from Madison, Wisconsin. No thunderstorm this time. In fact, it's snowing outside, and snow doesn't make a lot of noise. Talk to you soon.